Alright, Shishi Yav Nitzavim. How hard could it be? Lone Iflesi, it's not too much. Four psukim. Shouldn't be too far away, too hard for us to accomplish. Should be pretty karov. Or so we think. These four psukim, which seem to be the opposite, the anti-synergy of last week's longest aliyah in the Torah. So here we have a very short aliyah. Aliyah short enough that it might be the only aliyah in the Torah which has in its entirety been put to song, which you can listen to. So I don't know if that can be said about many aliyahs in the Torah. It's the whole aliyah is one song. But there is quite a lot to say about these four psukim. So let's see if we can manage it. Let's see if we can, the time allotted, do some degree of justice to these four psukim, which are somewhat surprising just how much there is to say about them. So the first is just figuring out what this first pasuk means. Ki ha-mitzvah hazos, asher anochi mitzavcha hayom, lo niflesi mimcha, lo rechokahi. This mitzvah, not too wondrous, lo niflesi, lo rechokahi, it's not far away. Terrific. What mitzvah are we talking about? So that, as we discussed a little bit this morning, is a topic of some debate. That from the Gemara, it sounds like Maseches Erevin that we're talking about Talmud Torah. But the Rishonim over here have other interpretations, and we'll come back to the Gemara. The Ramban has two interpretations, that this is talking about the mitzvah is the mitzvah in totality. All the mitzvahs of the Torah are not beyond us, they're attainable. Or, more specifically, the mitzvah of tshuva. And that's how you find in some of the other mefarshim and chumash as well, that this is very timely, right before Rosh Hashanah. So we're going to read about the mitzvah of tshuva, which would make sense in context, because the idea of tshuva was referenced earlier in the parsha, in Revi, where the Torah says, V'shavta ad Hashem Elokecha, you shall return. So now, a few psukim later, 2 years later, ki ha-mitzvah hazos could be a reference to that. So, aside from the Gemara again, we'll come back to that, but one of the main questions that the Sforim talk about here is the Rambam. That if it's true that this is a mitzvah of tshuva, or that there's a mitzvah of tshuva that we read about in Revi, so there's a lot of commentary about the Rambam, that the Rambam, in the beginning of Hilchos Tshuva, writes that there is a mitzvah that when one wants to do tshuva, sheyis vadeh, that if he wants to repent, that he should do vidui, he should confess. Which makes it sound a little bit like tshuva itself is not a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah of vidui, that is what one does when one decides to do tshuva. But tshuva by itself is not a mitzvah, and that's the understanding of the Mechas Rinoch, and of the Avodas Melech, and of others, that the Rambam is differing from the Ramban here and others and saying that tshuva is not a mitzvah. So that's a difficult thing to say. The Rambam, out of all the codifiers of halacha, the Rambam paid the most attention to tshuva. He gave it 10 prakim in Hilchos Tshuva, the laws of tshuva, more than you find in other svarim. And to say that he didn't think it was a mitzvah, despite all the various sources and hashkafic principles to the contrary, it's a little bit hard to accept. In the part of Yosef HaChadash, he has an interpretation which I think is even harder to accept, but it's interesting, so I can't resist mentioning, even though it's hard to believe that this is really the case. So, the part of Yosef HaChadash quotes an idea that the Rambam doesn't refer to a mitzvah of tshuva because the whole mitzvah is only b'di'evet. Rather, it would be better if we didn't do aveiros in the first place. So it's only because we did Navera that there's an Indian of tshuva. So you're surprised by that, as am I. So how would you like to...
I don't remember if anyone puts this in Sefer Mitzvah, but what about the idea of, what's it called?
Like Hashat HaSigdei?
Well, I was thinking of when you got Kiteitze with the, what's it called?
Ishtashtor.
Yeah, Ishtashtor.
So that's a different kind of the other, though. You're right, though, it's a question of what do we mean by a mitzvah, what's an ideal mitzvah, what's the possibility of a mitzvah. I have other problems with this interpretation. It's hard to say that this is only something that comes up if you happen to do an aveira, which you shouldn't do in the first place. I mean, first of all, the pasuk says, "Ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov v'lo." It's not shy that anyone's going to live a life without any aveira, so everyone's going to be chayiv in tshuva. And especially Rambam l'shitaso, you have to do tshuva even for midos ros. So who among us doesn't have a need for tshuva? And presumably, even if we were perfect, we'd have to do tshuva to be better. So to say that the tshuva is not something that's chiyuv on all of us because of that, it's quite the parallel, but it's just interesting. He quotes this idea to then explain certain things. He says, for example, he quotes from the Hidusha Harim, that the Mishnah says, if somebody says, Echte ba'ashuv, Einyo ha-kipur ma'chaper. Right? It says it twice. Somebody says, I will sin and I will do tshuva, I will sin and I will do tshuva, Yom Kippur is not ma'chaper. So why does he have to say it twice? Why doesn't he just say, if somebody says, I'll sin and I'll do tshuva, Yom Kippur is not ma'chaper. So it says the Hidusha Harim, that if he just said it once, maybe that was because he wants to be a perfectionist, he wants to fulfill the mitzvah of tshuva. So somebody who wants to sin once, so that he can fulfill the mitzvah of tshuva, okay, we understand that's because of the obligation of the mitzvah here. But then, what's the hetzer do a second time? So that could be no excuse for it. For the second, that's where you don't get the kapara. Again, that's quite the stretch. So he says that that's pshat on the Gemara, and he says you look in the Rambam. So the Rambam only has it once. Echte v'ashuv, there's no kapara because according to the Rambam, there's no mitzvah tshuva. So you wouldn't have that justification to do the aveira one time for the tshuva. Okay. He also quotes the Kerem Shlomo, who says that when the Gemara tells us that if you see a Talmid Chacham sha'avar aveira b'layla al tahar achir b'yom shema as tshuva. Says the Gemara, that you see a Talmid Chacham who sinned at night, don't think badly about him the next day, because maybe he did tshuva. The Gemara says, maybe, no, he definitely did tshuva. So there to us, it says that you shouldn't chalila think that Talmid Chacham would ever do an aveira for any other reason, except that the whole point was to do tshuva, because of this idea that if you say tshuva is a chiyuv, so then all the perfect people will have to do an aveira once in order to have the mitzvah of tshuva. It's a very difficult idea. I don't think any of that is really a pashut pshat. So the question of why the Rambam phrases things the way he does, it's difficult to say that he doesn't believe in a mitzvah of tshuva, and it's difficult to say that the tshuva is as was just formulated, that tshuva is only the evidence for people who happen to surprisingly sin. So rather, you could say a couple of other ways. So for example, if Yucham Olshin, his beautiful sefer on Mo'adim, Reich Mo'adim, beautiful, beautiful sefer, he has in a few of the Yom Tovim, so he has a volume on Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, and there he explains very nicely that he quotes the Ma'bit from the Kiryas Sefer, where the Ma'bit says that tshuva and vidui are one mitzvah together, and he explains that vidui includes the aziva sachet. So that is the verbalization of tshuva. Vidui is how tshuva is put into words. So what's the language of kishayasa tshuva that makes it sound like, oh, if you want to do this, here's what you do? So here he explains based on Rebitzel Petterberger, Rebitzel Blaser, the Kof Leor, who says that the only things that you do, we know tshuva has basically three parts. Right? It has charata, and azivas achet, and kabbalah l'asid. So says the Kof Leor, that it's only vidui with the Kabbalah la'asid, that's the only thing that you do because of a mitzvah of tshuva. Because aziva sachet, that's part of normal shmiras ha-mitzvahs. Right? We were always forbidden to do these aveiras. So now you want to do tshuva, you'll stop doing the aveira. Well, of course you have to stop doing the aveira. Everyone else was also forbidden to do the aveira. So it's not that, oh, because of the mitzvah of tshuva, now you have to stop doing the aveira. You were never allowed to do the aveira in the first place. So aziva sachet is a chelik of tshuva, but it's not something that we do because of the mitzvah of tshuva. It's something we have to do anyway. And charata, he says also, charata is simply common sense. If you did something that got you in trouble, so you're going to regret it. So that's essentially just a normal reaction. That's not something that you do either because of the mitzvah of tshuva. So it's only kabbalah la'asid that actually comes specifically because of tshuva, and vidui as the verbalization of that, that's only part of the tshuva process that you do because of the mitzvah tshuva specifically. So all of the process of tshuva is obligatory. But if we're going to isolate a part that you're doing because there's a mitzvah of tshuva, that's the vidui. That's how he explains the language of the Rambam, which is a very interesting explanation. And Rav Soloveitchik had a different explanation, also a very beautiful explanation, which along the lines of what we mentioned earlier in the week, we talked about Maisa Mitzvah and Kiyum HaMitzvah in the context of Shofar, and I think we mentioned the example of Simchas Yatif. There are a few other examples you could draw on over the course of the season. But here too, the Rav said that Avad the Tshuva is a mitzvah. You can't say it's not a mitzvah, and in that he was arguing on his uncle, the Avodas HaMelech, and on the Ben Chasinuch. He said, you can't say that Tshuva is not a mitzvah. Avad the Tshuva is a mitzvah. But the issue is that it is a state of mind. It is a mental mitzvah. So it's not something you can turn on and off. We, as we mentioned in the context of Shofar and Simchas Yontif, mitzvahs have to have actions, have to have a maisa that you can choose to do or not do. They can't be about emotions or feelings or a state of mind that's not really in your direct control. So yes, tshuva is a mitzvah, but the real essence of tshuva is somebody completely flipping internally, right? Which, to go back to our Kedushin point, right, where the Gemara seems to show that it's possible for a person to do tshuva in a way that takes a second and no one else sees that he's doing anything. Right? Because the Gemara says that that Mekadesh Yeshisha, Amanasha Mitzadik, even if everyone knows he's a Rasha, we still worry the Kedusha might be good because maybe there was this instant invisible process by which he did tshuva. So that is the ikur of tshuva. But still, we need a Maisa HaMitzvah. So what's the Maisa HaMitzvah? That is the vidui, that stating that you need to change, that is what should hopefully prompt you to do tshuva, and that's why the Rambam addresses things the way he does. So clearly he agrees there's a mitzvah of tshuva, but he formulates things as kish, yasa tshuva, when you want to do this, so then you should do vidui, because vidui is the maisa that one does in order to make tshuva happen. In that spirit, you could also explain last week's parshas, to go backwards from it, in parshas Kisavo, and second Aliyah, so you have the vidui meiser, you have the recitation that was accompanying the meiser, and there Chazal called that vidui, and everyone asks, the psukim, they don't sound like any vidui we know about, it doesn't sound like what we're saying now, ashamnu bagadnu gazalnu, because the language of the psukim is sisi kechol asher tzvisani, lo avaritim mitzvosecha, lo shachachti, I have fulfilled, all the mitzvahs of the Torah are fulfilled, this mitzvah completely. So what does that guy do with vidui? So I think you could say, based on this idea of the Rav, that we could translate vidui not as confession, but as a recitation that will provoke you to do tshuva. So normally, the recitation that's most likely to push you towards tshuva is Ashamnu Bagadnu Gadalnu, is realizing that you've made lots of mistakes and you're not perfect and you need to fix them. Because one Yetzirah, or a common Yetzirah, is you think you're perfect, you don't think you have any problems. But there's another Yetzirah that also needs to be addressed, and that's the Yetzirah of, I know I've made mistakes, I know I've done things wrong, but I'm not capable of doing anything any better. So then, what am I going to do tshuva for? So therefore, the Torah reminds us that no, you have to also own your successes. You have to also be able to recognize that Asisi Gechol Asher Tzvisani today, Lo Avart Mitzvaysecha Lo Shachachti, that at least in this instance I've done everything perfectly, and if I did everything perfectly today, I'm capable of doing it more often. So I can't just say, oh, I can't expect anything better from me. But rather, you have to live up to what you can do, and that's perhaps the message of calling that a vidui. Okay, so in any event, it's very likely that the Rambam acknowledges their mitzvah of tshuva, and that maybe this pasuk means for him as well a mitzvah of tshuva, like it does for the Ramban, like it does for the Sforno, and for others. But there's still a question that the Gemara seems to understand it as talking about Talmud Torah. So how do we reconcile that? Why are these Meforshim and Chumash all deviating from the Gemara's interpretation? So here there is an idea that a number of Svarim quote from Rav Aaron Cutler. Shlomo Warman has an essay where he quotes this idea from him. I think Shulti in the Sefer Mishnas Yavetz also has such an idea. quoted from him as well, that we know there's a very mysterious concept called Tshuva Me'ava, which sounds beautiful, but is very frustrating. Because the Gemara says in the end of Yuma that there's a stira between the two statements of Yochanan, if I remember correctly, two statements that contradict each other from the same Bala Memra. One is G'dola Tshuva. Tshuva is terrific. Says G'dola Shemo Nasim Lo Kishkagis, that if you do Tshuva, you get a clean slate. All your avers turn into nothing. And the other statement is G'dola Tshuva. Says G'dola Shemo Nasim Lo Kizachios. Tshuva is great because your avers turn into Zachuyos. So which is it? Does it clean the slate and make it nothing? Or is it even more than that? Does it actually make it into a positive schus? So the Gemara says, well, it depends what kind of tshuva. If it's tshuva meira, so then that just makes your averus into nothing. If it's tshuva me'ava, that's even better, and that makes your averus into actual zechuyos. So that's a beautiful idea. That's terrific. But it's very frustrating. Because tshuva by itself is already frustrating. Right? We don't know what we need to do tshuva. This is something that Rav Kook addresses in the beginning of the Sefer, Oras HaTshuva. So he talks about how tshuva is both the hardest and the easiest mitzvah, because it sounds like from the Gemara we mentioned, Kedushin, it's the easiest, it's like that, take a second. At the same time, when do we ever really have a sense of confidence that we did tshuva before? You come back to yeshiva a month from now, and I ask you, did you fulfill the mitzvah of Lulav and Esra? You can answer me. If I ask you, did you sit in the sukkah on sukkahs? Did you fast in Kippur? Did you hear a shofar? They'll probably all tell me, presumably, yes. Or for whatever reason, no, you could say no. But if I ask you the day after Yom Kippur, so, did you do tshuva? What are you going to say? I hope. I tried. I don't know how many people come after the day after Yom Kippur and say, oh, yeah, I did it. Done. Checked it off my list. Right? So we never really know that we have fulfilled this mitzvah. It's very frustrating. So it's very different in that way from every other mitzvah in the Tukra, where we can have a sense, okay, we're pretty confident we heard the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. It's a pretty safe guess that I can say with some security that I took a lulav and esrog. I'm pretty sure about that. But after Yom Kippur, to say, do you do tshuva or not, I think all of us would have a hard time saying, yes, 100%, done and done, no problem. Sorry? Yeah, because it's so hard to know with any confidence that we've really accomplished it, that it's such an internal transformation. We could say that we took all the steps we could take or that we could think of taking, but who knows? We don't have any way of actually verifying that it's done or holding it in our hand and feeling that this is something that we can point to. So in that sense, Rav Kook writes that tshuva is both the easiest and the hardest mitzvah. It could be in both directions. Very, very different than every other mitzvah in the Torah. So that's already the case. Now you're going to tell me that, oh, there's this magic tshuva called tshuva me'ava that can accomplish even more. Well, great. I have a hard enough time knowing the basic level of tshuva, so how am I going to know how to activate this super tshuva? So basic tshuva, so okay, we're taught basic tshuva involves, like we just said a minute ago, vidoy, charata, zifusachet, kabbalah asid. What is tshuva me'ava? What do you have to do tshuva me'ava? And just to make it a little more tantalizing, so there's a notion of the dalet chilukei kapara, where it says that there are different severities, different averos, and some of them need more in order to really be atoned. So it depends on what level of error it is, what type of process you need to go through in order to get a full kapara. So the Menachem Sinus writes that that's only true for tshuva me'ira. The tshuva me'ava can take you right to the front of the line. Tshuva me'ava gives you instant kapara for everything. He says that based on a Gemara, based on Yerushalmi, where the Gemara says that different midos were asked what should happen to the avarian, and they all responded, "Yomus v'cheto, he should die for his sin." Until they asked the Torah, and the Torah says, "Yasa tshuva v'yistaver." So apparently, there's a type of tshuva which, boom, happens right away, even though it is a chiyuv misa, because the other answers were that he should die for his avera. So apparently, even though it's a chiyuv misa, you can get a kapara right away from tshuva. So what happened to the dalet chilukei kapara? So it says, Minchas Chinuch must be that's Tshuva Me'ava. Tshuva Me'ava can cut the line, you go right to a full kapar. Terrific. So what do you do? What's Tshuva Me'ava? So it says the Rav Kavler, he says, that's how we reconcile the Ramban with the Gemara. Ramban says the mitzvah is tshuva, the Gemara says it's talking about Talmud Torah. Said Ivan Kotler, it's the same thing. Now, what is the process of tshuva? The process of tshuva in this sense, in the perfect sense of tshuva me'ava, that is engaging in Talmud Torah for the purpose of transformation. That on the one hand, we know the Rambam, when he describes the chote, when he talks about the sinner, he says that the effect of sin is that it distances you from God. It pushes you away from the divine presence. And when he talks about Talmud Torah, he says Talmud Torah is an act of Avos Hashem that brings you closer to God. So basically, you have this distance, you have this gap between you and God that was created by sin. So there are two ways to bridge the gap. Either you could try to undo the damage through tshuva and regretting it and moving away from the Avera. Or you could build a bridge and go over that gap. So since Talmud Torah brings you closer to God, and there are many Mamari Chazal which can echo this idea, so then perhaps that's what's going on, that Tshuva Me'ava is something that takes place through Talmud Torah, and that's how we reconcile these ideas. Hi.
Does it really seem like we emphasize Talmud Torah in Tshuva season? It seems like it's,
well,
like it's important to continue doing or...
Yeah,
like,
which we try to here.
Like if the motto of tshuva is tshuva tefillah tzedakah. So if you're going to say that it included in tshuva is tshuva me'ava, which one possibility is Talmud Torah, then like yes, that would technically fit into the motto. But if you don't include it, so then why is it bad?
So maybe we should include it more. You know, maybe that's should be again take opportunities in the Torahathon. And they're like there are also those of Bali Machshava who understood that the scheme of the year is that really Yom Kippur is for Tshuva Meirah, and then we followed up with Sukkot, which is a time of so many active mitzvahs, that is a time of Tshuva Me'ava. And they want to suggest that that's also why we observe Simchas Torah, which is a later edition, we observe Simchas Torah in conjunction with Sukkot, because that's really the theme, Hashanah Rabbah, the end of Sukkot, the whole idea of the Tshuva Me'ava, that really is a celebration of Torah. On another personal level, so my daughter, whose birthday is today, if you're listening to this whole thing, my oldest daughter, her birthday, her English birthday is today, but her Hebrew birthday was Erev Sukkot. She was born Erev Sukkot, so we gave her the middle name Ahuva because of that theme, and because Tshuva represents, because Sukkot represents the theme of Tshuva Me'ava, so that was why she's named Ahuva. So that is the theme. Again, who emphasizes what is a little bit up to who's doing the talking. But you know, this is definitely a time when we should be emphasizing Talmud Torah as well. And again, here the yeshiva has been so cooperative. We've even created a system where we only have Torah studies during Seder Simei Tshuva. So what more could you ask for? A Torahathon and a clear schedule. So that really counts as emphasis, I think. So, in any event, so to go a little further, try to get some of the other themes here. So, the Pasuk does say, Lo Neflesi. So, the idea of Lo Neflesi is that it's not too wondrous for us. So, Laharus Nassim, Nassim Gishtetner, has a comment on this Pasuk. Says that the Torah always has deeper meanings, deeper kavanos. There's always all kinds of soul that's included in the Torah. So one might think, okay, unless I connect to all of that, there's no point in mitzvos. So he suggests that Pasuk is also going to tell you that no, the mitzvos are always accessible to you. Whether or not you're able to interpret all the different levels, all the sodos, all the deep thoughts, that's possibly for a later time. But the mitzvah itself is all the place. The mitzvah is always there for you to perform. And one should think that this is something that requires an understanding that's beyond you. And now the Pasuk continues again, all these four psukim, very, very well known. Very famous phrase, one of the most famous phrases, these next three words, Lo v'shamayim bi. Torah is not in heaven. Le'mor, that one might say, Mi yale lonu ha'shamayim v'yikachel lonu v'yashmi'enu osach v'na'asena. Who's going to help us? Who's going to give me this super ladder that's going to go all the way up to Shemayim to get it for us? And then, if only that would happen, then they'd be able to teach it to us, and we would be able to do it. So that's not a good thing to say, because that's not where the Torah is. The Torah is not in Shemayim. So that has many different meanings to it. If you look, for example, at Rav Shamshon Fal Hirsch, says that the point here is to say that no one can claim that their insight in Torah comes because of supernatural enlightenment. It comes from Chachma. So if you can make your case on Chachma, that's where it comes from. But Nevuah, as the Elder Gemara says in a number of places, that the Nevuah as a source of Torah, as a source of Halacha, ended with Moshe Rabbeinu. And nowadays we don't really have a Nevi'im about anything, but definitely Nevi'im as a source of Torah, we don't have anymore. Hi.
So what would we say about the mystical traditions of Kabbalah?
So that's a chelek of Torah, but as far as teaching what Halacha should be, we'll tell you a little bit more about that in a second. So that doesn't come from there. That comes from working at it. It comes from Chachma. And we'll say a little more about that in a minute. But there are a few other lines that are based on this idea. The Rambam in his Perush and Mishnayos to Avos in Parakei and Mishnah Hay, and also the Mishnah Torah in Hachos Talmud Torah in Parak Gimel Halacha Tes. The Rambam writes that the Torah is not found lo b'shamayim, people who are as haughty as Shamayim, people who are Bali Gaiva. That's not a place you're ever going to find the Torah. That's not what is the quality of Talmud Chacham. And that, he's really combining phrases from the Gemara. The Gemara, the same Gemara in Erev, and then, hey, where all these interpretations are found. So the Gemara says the Torah is not found in those who are Magdiya Daito Aleha B'Shamayim. And then the other opinion is not found in Begasi HaRuach. So they both sound like they're talking about Paligaiva. The Torah to me notes, but it's two different mimerim there, so it sounds like it must mean two different things, even though they're both gaiva related. So he suggests that the first one is talking about here success in the Talmud Torah. So the first one is Magbiya Daito al Shamayim, somebody who questions the Kari Amuna, who thinks he's smarter than God, so to speak, or thinks he's above the basic principles of faith. So you're not going to have success in Talmud Torah under those conditions. And the second one is Tamba Bal Gaiba, who's too proud to admit he doesn't know something. He's too proud to ask other people for help. So that's also not going to be a recipe for success in learning. The Gemara also, there in Erev and Daf Nechas, has a statement that Lo B'Shamayim, he means that, oh, you're lucky it's not in Shamayim, because apparently if it were in Shamayim, that's what you'd have to do. You'd have to go get it. So that's difficult to understand. First, you try to figure out how do you see that from this pasuk specifically. It sounds more like the pasuk because you're telling you, don't worry, it's not inaccessible, it is accessible. But to say that, oh, put a taka if we're up there, then that's what you'd have to do. So it's not clear what to do with that. So let's say we're in Shemayim, so then all of a sudden we become the chassidim of the space program. Because Sternbach has that tshuva where he goes off on the space program, he thinks it's the biggest waste of money ever, and has no tachlis. So, but if we didn't have this pasuk, then maybe taka we'd need it. I mean, what does it mean that you have to go to Shemayim to get it? So, one could suggest that what it means is that we know that we have a principle of onus rachmona patre, that if you don't have the opportunity to do a mitzvah, so then you're not held responsible for not doing it. If it's impossible, if you can't get it, so if the only pair of children in the world were somehow up in Shemayim and you were down here, so you'd be potter for not wearing tefillin. You'd be potter for not taking a mitzvah if there weren't any on the whole planet. But that doesn't necessarily mean, just because we say onus rachmona patre, you're off the hook, no one's going to yell at you for not doing it. But it doesn't mean that we say onus commando of it. It doesn't mean that we say that an onus is as if you actually did the mitzvah. So here, maybe the message is that the effect of Talmud Torah on the individual, on your spiritual and your emotional development, is not something that can be replaced any other way. So even if you have the best excuse in the world, what can I do? The Torah is up in Shemayim. The Torah is Me'ever Ayam. The Torah is somewhere I just can't reach it. You can't hold me responsible. So we'll say, okay, great, you're not responsible, but you're also not Talmud Chacham. You're also not what is going to be created by a Torah experience. And therefore, that also conveys the message to us that, okay, maybe we wouldn't have a way to get to Shemayim, but we have to recognize that we shouldn't be satisfied with any excuses when it comes to Talmud Torah, because whatever else is going on, I guess this is also a good message for the endless eternal midterm season, that whatever good excuses we may have, that we just can't come to Seder today, we can't come to Shir. So the excuses could be terrific excuses, but the fact is you're not going to ever be able to replace that Seder and Shir, that the effect that would have had on who you are, spiritually and otherwise, simply can't be replaced. So just like the Pasuk is currently telling us that if it were Min HaShamayim, you'd have to go there to get it, so too, you'd have to understand that whatever midterms are in your way, whatever else is in your way, that if you want the Torah to accomplish what it needs to accomplish, nothing is going to suffice other than actually getting there, other than actually doing it. There is a very different level. There's a story that the Altar of Kelm relates from Yisrael Salanter, which is a little hard to understand 100%. It's quoted in the Sefer L'Sitcha Elyon, which is a nice Sefer which quotes ideas from the Balei Musar on the Parasha. So in this passage, he quotes it, L'Sitcha Elyon. L'Sitcha Elyon. Lamed Tav Tav Chav. So there, he quotes a story that the Altar of Kelm said that he kept the secret for 30 years and didn't tell anyone. Now he's going to reveal it. It's hard to understand exactly what he means by that. He says that when he was a younger man, that he was confronted by Rabbi Saul Salanter and Rosh Hashanah, Rabbi Saul Salanter, who basically made the point to him that lo b'shamayimi, that the main avoda that we have in this world is to work on our midos, is to work on our benodim l'chavero. Because since the Torah is not in Shemayim, since the Torah is given to us to determine, and that means that the most consequential concepts are going to be up to human beings to figure out and to apply. Misas Bezdin and the other Dvarim, Ha'umdim, Barum, Shalolam, are all going to be filtered through human involvement. So then, really, the biggest priority is to make sure that we're completely honest, that we're completely fair, that all of our midos are completely refined, otherwise we're going to be in huge trouble. Otherwise, these humongous ideas are also something that gives us pause in an election season, right? So, you know, the question is always, how much do we focus on character, when at least have the possibility of doing that, in electing a leader? So part of the question is it possible to be a good leader just because you're smart or skilled? What if you're not fundamentally a refined personality and you're not honest and you're not really devoted to others? So then all the other talents you may have aren't going to matter. So if the Torah is takalo b'shamayim, is filtered through human beings, and all these incredibly consequential aspects of halacha are all going to hang on how human beings interpret them. So then taka, this becomes the highest priority, that we should have midos that are completely refined. So on that point, so lo b'shamayim, there is a famous story, very, very well known, I'm sure you're all familiar, the Gemara in Masechet Bava Metzia, and Daf Tes in the days, and you're correct, that will be Daf Yomi in less than 2 months. So good to start thinking about it. So there, the Gemara tells a story about Tanur Shal Achnoi, that there was Machlokas, Lazar, and Rabbi Yeshua, and everybody else, about the issue, the complicated topic of Tanur Shal Achnoi. And Lazar had a position that everyone else disagreed with. And he held his ground. He said, if I'm right, the that the water will stand up. And no one paid attention to him. They said, we don't pass him based on water. So he said, well, coastal based on Medrash Hichu, and the walls will tilt, if I'm right. And indeed, the walls started tilting. And he said, we don't pass him based on the walls. So then he said that God himself will tell you I'm right. And Baskol came out from Shemayim and said, Taka the halacha is like him. And they all said, too bad, we don't pass him like Baskol's either. Lo b'shamayim, the Torah is not in heaven, the Torah has been given to human beings, and it's up to us to paskin. So it's a very famous Gemara, quoted in a lot of contexts in a lot of different ways, depending a little bit on your perspective, but certainly Gemara is always a topic of discussion. Tosfos raises the issue that there is a seemingly contradictory Gemara in Yevamos. So the Gemara says that there's machlokes b'sil b'shamay, and the Baskol came out and said that even though they weren't sure what to do, because Beis Shammai was in the minority, but still what was in the majority. But Beis Shammai were machadei tvei. Beis Shammai were sharper. So who should we paskin like? So the Basfel came out and said we paskin like Beis Hillel. So apparently we follow the Basfel. So Tosfos asks, so do we follow the Basfel or do we not follow the Basfel? So Tosfos has a few answers. One answer Tosfos has is that the Basfel in Bavitzia was only there to protect. It was discovered. Apparently it wasn't really a real Basfel. They didn't verify it. I don't know exactly what that means. But the other approach Tosfos has is that it depends. In the case in Bava Metzia, we know the halacha was not like Rabbi Elazar because we follow the road. So the Gemara quotes there. We've already said Acharav Mahatos. So since the majority was against him, so a Baskol cannot come and undo halacha by saying ignore the road. But in the case of Gemara Nivamas, so Beis Hillel was in the road. So there was already a reason to follow them. It happened to be the question was just should we say we should follow Beis Shammai anyway? Because they were sharper. And the Gemara says no, but Beis Hillel was more modest, and they taught both positions, and they said Beis Shammai's position first, and in a row. So with all that, so we can follow the Baskol. So what does that mean? It sounds like the Kovet Shiurim, Rav Elchanan says in the Kuntres de Beis Ofrim, which we've been referring to on occasion, the section of the Kovet Shiurim where he talks about Psak and Hora and Dinim Drabana. So there he says the distinction seems to be that if the Baskol is coming to overturn Halacha, we don't listen to the Baskol. But if the Baskol is coming in a case where there's a Safek Hashako, where it's 50-50, then the Baskol can come and be Machriya. And others didn't read the Tosfos that way. So, for example, Michal Yud Lefkowitz was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva Tzirim in Panevich. So there's a sefer called Kamatar Likhi, which collects a lot of different shtiklach and parsha from different Rosh Yeshiva. So there it has a piece from Michal Yud Lefkowitz, where he says that he doesn't think that it's really coming to tell you we paskin halacha ever based on a Baskol. But rather, we would believe a Baskol if a Baskol comes and uncovers some matter of fact. So here, they had a suffix. Should we pay attention to the fact that Beis Shammai, they were sharper? So the Baskol says, no, that's not something that we acknowledge in this case. We don't pay attention to that. So that's why, and that's not something that is a hakra and halacha specifically. And you find that in general, Tar Tamim over here writes that we do listen to a Navi for Gilui Milsa, if he's going to uncover some element of reality. So we do listen to him. And the Sefer Tosfos Yom HaKippur, the Yuma Daf Ayin Hey, I think we mentioned that Sefer the other day, right? The same author, we were talking about Shofar, recorded Sefer Yom Trua. So Yom Trua is the same author, his Sefer Yom Kippur is called Tosfos Yom HaKippur. So Tosfos Yom HaKippur, he says, it's also the Gemara that it says that the man that fell in the Midbar, so the man was helpful for Sherlock Holmes. They had to uncover mysteries, so the man would sometimes uncover them. So for example, if you had a woman who was pregnant and she was married to one husband and she at first, and then she married another husband without waiting. So we don't know when the baby was born. Was it a 9-month baby from the first husband or a 7-month baby from the second husband? So the man would help tell you the answer, because the man was assigned per family, so this baby's man would turn up in one of the houses, the father, first father, second father, you would know which one it was. Or if there was a fight between two people, and one says, you stole my evid, and the other one says, you sold it to me, and that's appropriate for the first half of Bavin Tzvi, which is a definitely a reference. So to here, you could say that the man will tell you that this Eved's man will turn up in one person or the other, you'll know who the real owner is. So is that paskening based on miracles, paskening based on Shemayim? So there also, Tosfos Kippurim explains that no, it's not, you're not getting a shita l'halacha from Shemayim, you're getting factual information. This is the man's way of just telling you the Messias of what happened here, and for that we can rely on miraculous things, we can rely on things, Menah Shemayim. The Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Pei Zayin tells the story of Rav Nachmani, that he was involved in Machlokas, in Hilchos Tzaras, And when he died, he said that death situation was tar. And nonetheless, we don't pass him like him, pass him as tummy. So the Kesef Mishnah explains in Halachos Tumas Saras and Perek Beis Halacha Tes that because Lo B'Shamayim here, somehow his dying breath is not something that we can rely on Allah. It's like some type of divine inspiration. So if some sofer has the truth, obviously it doesn't get it. Then since when do we assume that somebody's dying words are not significant Allah in a normal way, but rather like Shamayim speaking through his lips? He doesn't see where you find any basis for this. But here, if you want a little bit of maybe forced synergy, but we'll take any synergy we can get, Rabbi Yochum Dvorkis, in his Sefer Tzfunus HaParsha, has a nice discussion over here about this whole question of when you paskin based on Shamayim and the like. And the whole idea of Lo B'Shamayim, the idea of this uniquely Jewish fascinating concept that the halachic process has been given over to human beings to finalize and to decide, and God doesn't contradict that. So he says, this is Gemara Misachas Brachos, here's where the synergy is going to come, where the Gemara says that Lo K'midas Basar V'Dam Minas Kodesh Baruch Hu, that God is different than people, because normally if somebody sells something, so the buyer is happy and the seller is sad. And here, when God gives us the Torah, so that's like a purchase. God has, so to speak, sold us the Torah, and yet he's still happy. So you see, he's different than people. So as he notes there, you could ask, well, it's not really comparable. When a seller sells something, he's not happy because he doesn't have the item anymore. And when God gave us the Torah, he didn't lose the Torah. The Torah is still there with God and with us. So the fourth synergy, if you recall yesterday, we talked about the idea that all Mechira is under duress to some extent. Because you could say, why is Mar assuming the seller is unhappy? The seller made a good deal. He sold something for a good price. They should both be happy. The purchaser should be happy and the seller should be happy. So this Gemara seems to be working off that assumption that the Gemara in Bava Basra, that really the seller would prefer never to sell anything. And he only sells because he needs money. So even though he got a good price, he's still a little bit sad that he had to part with his item. So, okay, what does that got to do with God? God isn't in the same position. The Torah is still there with him. Or the Gemara says in Shabbos in Daf Peches that the Malachim got all upset that the Torah was being given to human beings. And why did they care? What were they jealous about? You know, so they could have a Torah too. So we'll all study together. We'll learn Torah, they'll learn Torah. Why did the Torah being given to the Jewish people mean that the Malachim didn't have it? So both of those questions he answers based on the Drasha Saran, because it's not a reference to the Torah in the sense of being able to learn it or observe it, but it's a reference to this idea of Lo B'Shamayim, that now the methodology of Torah, the interpretation of Torah, L'Halach L'Maisa, is now in the hands of human beings. So that Kaviyachal is Kadosh Baruch Hu giving up something. He's now saying, okay, it's up to you to determine the Torah. I'm not going to introduce any new dinim. And the Malachim are also at a disadvantage. They don't have that type of access to the Torah the Jews have. So that's what they're complaining about. That's all based on this idea, Lo B'Shamayim. It's given out to the Jews. So just a quick hurry here. That Baal Turim notes that Mi Yalalana Hashamayma is a reference to Rosh Hashanah's Mila. That maybe it's saying that that's the mitzvah that is necessary to go up to Shamayim. Chassam Sofer has a couple of drushes on this idea. It's just a little hara if you need to speak at a bris. You should know that as that rema is in the parsha. So then the pasta continues. That's essentially kind of the same theme as the previous pasuk, and the Gemara has again that same comment that if it was Me'ev Rayam, you would have to go Me'ev Rayam. That all of that idea is included there, and then the pasuk the Aliyah ends Ki Kara Ve'Lecha Hadavar Ma'od V'Ficha U'Bovavcha Laso. So the matter is very close to you, in your mouth, in your heart, to do it. So what's the significance of all those words? So first of all, the Sifrei Chassidus, Tanyos, Chasemis, and others say that the language of Kikara Bilecha Hadavar Ma'od is a way of saying that there's something inside of you, there's something that's a part of you that keeps you close to God and that keeps you from sinning. So that's something that we are told as chizuk, that we should know that however hard things are, we have this haftacha, so to speak. And Nassim Tzvi Finkel, the Yeshiva, Mir Yeshiva, so he's quoted also as having said that such a big gap between the Hatman and Maskar and the Lerichok, you would have thought Torah is far away. No, it's not far away, it's very close. So, wow, that's a pretty big switch. So he says, really, the challenges of life can be very great. That if somebody just tries to do the mitzvos stam, they can be tremendously challenging, and it really could be he rechoka. He really could be very far. But if somebody brings himself closer to God through mussar, through his bonedness, through thinking about the consequences of things, and really reflecting it, so then it becomes a no-brainer. And then it becomes kikar v'lecha davar ma'od, and that's the intent of the pasuk. In any event, there's a lot of discussion as to what is going on with all these body parts, b'ficha, b'valcha, asozo, your mouth, your heart, the tshuva. So here the Rambam says that, Raman says rather, that picha is vidui. These are the steps of tshuva, consistent with what you said before about the pasuk earlier referring to tshuva. So now we're talking about how you do tshuva. So b'ficha is a vidui. Ugovavcha, that is a Kabbalah Belay. It's interesting also, some of the Sfarim point out that it seems to be out of order. Normally you have an idea, and then you fulfill it. Right? So first something is in your lathe, and then you tell people about you're going to do it, that's the mouth, and then you go do it, that's the lasoso. But here it's Beficha first, and then Govavcha. So that could also reflect the idea we mentioned before about Vidoy, that there's a hope here that speaking a certain way will have an impact on your thinking. So, therefore, first it's paficha, first you'll do vidui, and the vidui will transform you internally, and then that's govavcha, and then action follows that. Sorry, Rabban. Rabbeinu Bechaya understands that there's a reference here to the three yisodos, that paficha is Talmud Torah, and there's talk and learning. There's always a discussion about whether you are Mekayim Talmud Torah Behirah or not. So some suggest you're only Mekayim Talmud Torah really when you speak it out, when you talk and learning. It's a question because Shulchan Aruch says that you only make Birchas HaTorah when you verbalize Talmud Torah, not if you're just thinking and learning. And the Gra challenges him. The Gra says that we Mekayim Talmud Torah with hear her also. Just thinking about it, why do you need only to speak it in order to make a bracha? There's many, many interpretations of that whole discussion. It's interesting just to reflect back on the idea of Talmud Torah as tshuva that we talked about before. So there was a famous debate, which you can read about in Halachic Man, Soloveitchik in his book Halachic Man, talks about this whole back and forth. And it says the Talmidim of Yisrael Salanter, when there was a real fight about the Musar movement, whether there should be Musar in the Yeshivas or not, that the Talmidim of Yisrael Salanter came to Reb Chaim Brisker, who was a Rebbe in the Lashon Yeshiva, and they said you should introduce Musar into the Yeshiva. And he didn't want to. And they said, well, I'll bring you a proof from the Gemara. The Gemara says in Brachos, in Daf Hey, the Gemara says that La'olam Yargiz Adam Yitzhatov makes Sahara, that person should always fight against his Yitzhahara, because the Pasuk says, Rigzu Yal Tachtol, you should fight and you shouldn't sin. And if you're having a hard time, so then you should learn Torah. And if that doesn't work, so then you should say Kriya Shema. And if that doesn't work, then you should think about the day of death. So that idea of thinking about the day of death, that evoked a very intense kind of mussar that they were involved in at that time. And he said to Reb Chaim, I think it was Taka, it's Itzel Tetteberger, I mentioned before, Yitzchak Blazer was having this conversation with Reb Chaim. He said that you see that the Gemara says that the best remedy that trumps all the rest, no pun intended, the best remedy that that comes and all the others don't work, is Yask Yom HaMisa. So you see this intense kind of mussar is the most effective. So Reb Chaim responded that, no, that's not a logical thing to say. That's like saying that if the doctor says, oh, if you want to be healthy, you should eat right and exercise. And if that doesn't work, you're going to have to take medicine. And if that doesn't work, you're going to need to have surgery. So then maybe we should say, okay, so surgery is apparently the most effective, so everyone should have surgery. So no, we see that it's only for somebody who's sick who needs surgery. So too, this Yaskav HaMisa, it's only people who are spiritually sick. But here in Belajan, we're very successful using Talmud Torah as our method of keeping us straight, and we don't need any focused Musar. Talmud Torah does it. So that was the whole debate. I think the two sides have kind of come together on this one, but I think it's also interesting to note that the pasuk the Gemara talks about is the pasuk is Rigzu Ve'al Tefto Imru B'lavchem HaMashkavchem V'dom Musela. So the Gemara said V'dom Musela it's Yom HaMisa and HaMashkavchem that's Kriyashma that you say V'shpiva and Imru B'lavchem that's Talmud Torah. So some bring that as a source that you can be mekayim. Marsham is a tshuva that you can be mekayim Talmud Torah over here because it says imru b'levavchem, say it in your heart. But you could also say that if that's the context of the pasuk is talking about guiding the Tahara through Talmud Torah. So it's saying not just that learning automatically does it, but that specifically imru b'levavchem, that you have to learn in a way that you are talking to your heart, that you are talking to your emotional state, and that if your Talmud Torah is able to connect to your personality, then good. But if not, you're going to need more in order to have an impact. So in any event, so there's a lot to talk about whether Beficha is Talmud Torah or Levavchem is Talmud Torah, but Rebbeinu Bachya writes here that Beficha is Talmud Torah, and that Levavcha, that's Avoda, and that also that's Gemilas Chasadim, and those are the things that we do. Rav Asher Weiss, Shlita, has a little mimer in the end of the Sefer on Dvarim about this, where he notes that mitzvos can be very challenging, that mitzvos require a lot of intellect, and they require sometimes a lot of passion and commitment, which we're not always able to evoke. So therefore, we need to know that, yes, on the one hand, they're seemingly difficult, but you can do them when you activate your heart and your mouth. So v'ficha, there he's understanding again through Talmud Torah. And levavcha is musar. So if you study the mitzvot and you study them with an emotional bent through the limud of musar, so then you'll be able to accomplish the mitzvot, and that's the reassurance to those, the whole theme of the Saliyah, who think it's rechoka, mevriyam, that the mitzvot are too hard. So the answer is no, that if you learn and if you try to direct yourself in Musar, you'll be able to fulfill them. The Laharus Nassim mentioned before, of Nassim Gishtevner, in his Sefer on Chumash, so he notes that sometimes we find that there are ways that you can get credit for mitzvos even without actually doing them. So for example, if a person, or at least not, as you mentioned before, maybe not credit, but at least not get in trouble, so one of them is, the Gemara says, that if a person has a machshava to do a mitzvah, and he's not able to actually do it, so he's still credited with the mitzvah, because he gets credit for his machshava. That's one way where a person can, so to speak, fulfill a mitzvah without actually doing it. Another way is through Talmud Torah. We know the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, the end of Menachos, that nowadays that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so how do we fulfill the idea of Karbanos? So we feel that Nejama pardons for Seinu, that we learn about the Karbanos instead, and that's how we fulfill them. And the Rekeach and others have a whole discussion. Is that limited to Karbanos? That it's only Karbanos that we can fulfill through Talmud Torah? Or is it true about other things also? What if, like we mentioned before, you don't have a Lulav and Esrog, you're on a desert island, in Sukkos, and there's no Lulav and Esrog anywhere, but luckily there is a Shulchan Aruch. It's an unusual island which doesn't have trees but does have sperm. So you can learn the halachas of Lulav and Esrog, and that will be as if you fulfilled the mitzvah. So you're able to fulfill the mitzvah through learning about it or if you're wanting to do it. So that's only true, he says, if you're really trying to do it. If you're doing everything in your power to actually fulfill the mitzvah, it's not possible. So then your intent could count or learning about it could count. So he says, that's beficha, bovavcha, lasoso. Beficha, learning about it could be like the mitzvah, or bovavcha, just wanting to the mitzvah could be like the mitzvah, but that's assuming lasoso, assuming that your desire is actually to do it, then those other paths will also accomplish the same thing. And just to close with, so the Gemara also back to the Gemara, the Gemara says, so kikarov v'lecha, so when is it kikarov? When it's last also, when it's to do. So the Torah Tumimah has a comment here that we know that we often talk about learning. So learning is at a higher level when it's lasuke shmaisa lizu dehocha. So when we're learning the halacha, it's the bottom line. And that doesn't just mean that, oh, the only thing we really care about is practical halacha, so as long as you're learning that, that's the most important lima. It's not really what it means. It means that whatever you're learning something which isn't actually practiced, but you learn it with the mindset of performing it, that you have to know what's actually going to be done if the mitzvah is performed. So that's going to be the most immersive experience, and that's going to be where you're going to connect mostly with the material. If it doesn't have any relationship to anything in practice, then it's just going to pass you over, or pass through you, perhaps. But if you're really thinking, okay, I've got to know the bottom line, so I've got to know what to do, and you relate to the learning with that type of focus, so then it's karabilacha, then it's going to be something that's going to stick with you, something you're going to understand more, and you're going to appreciate more, and that's perhaps also the message of this pasuk. Okay, so one of the mitzvahs we have to do is mincha. So we'll stop here, but I hope that's not suspected.